It's not clean.
Happy Friday, the last day of the Utah legislative session. So many people are going to breathe a sigh of relief because they don't have to hear about it on the news anymore. And you guys don't have to keep working on bills. Either way, we will be happy to have it done and another one in the books. Before we get to the legislative session, though, there's always so many things to talk about. We've been talking about how it is filing season, kind of hunting season, as you're finishing up the legislative session. All kinds of people running for all kinds of races. Today, Evan McMullen officially filed, I believe, to run for U.S. Senate, hoping to unseat Senator Mike Lee. And I understand that one of our guests here today, I should introduce who you are in case you're new, Mara Caravello from the Xero Group. And Greg Hughes.
Citizen Hughes.
All right. You can be whatever you want to be. But tonight you're going to be emceeing a benefit for
MC
Senator
Hughes.
That's right.
Without the turntables. Yeah.
Who knows? I've never seen you MC before. So are you kind of like a loose fun cannon?
Yes.
Are you very
serious? I don't know about fun, but I just do it
don't
anything
you think
I
it's
want.
Situational. I mean, Heidi, if we're picking and choosing, I would probably go watch him do one of his boxing matches, not maybe a Republican fundraiser. I don't know if this is what the most fun side of
I
Greg Hughes.
I feel like he might do them maybe the same, like whether he's at a boxing
What I find kind of fun is that they gave me what they call the run of show. Run of show is how they think this is supposed to run, how the show's supposed to
it's
go.
It's not going to?
Well, I just hate what they want me to do, so I'm just going to do what I want to do. Mm-hmm. So, but that's, like I'm supposed to introduce, so what it is it's Senator Lee is having a I don't know if it's a fundraiser or a
don't
rally,
you?
But
are you
I,
not sure?
I'm not even sure of the event I'm
sure
attending, but we are having
for
a.
Money.
I think
we
you
are,
have to pay
it's a start. Yeah, it's a
attend.
Fundraiser.
Yeah, it's pretty much a fundraiser.
But I am encouraging them to go to their caucus meetings, and so there's a lot of grassroots encouragement going on at this meeting
about
as well.
$1,000.
So it's kind
a
of a rally
grassroots.
That way. But here's the thing: Senator Rand Paul is in town. He's going to be there. Governor Kristi Noem is going to be here for Senator Mike Lee. And I love these two leaders, and they are national leaders, not just a respective senator from Kentucky or the governor of South Dakota. They are, in my opinion, national leaders. So they want me to introduce them and bring them onto the stage. Well, they have these bios, but I think they are boring. So I'm going to introduce them.
Spice it up.
As I know them, or how I have observed them during the last couple years, and why I'm excited for them to be here. So,
Greg, frankly,
I'm going
I
off
think
script.
You are talented enough to do a rap. If I just want to plant that. I just think
this
you're
is a
talented
trick.
Enough.
Heidi, this is
a
trick by Mara to make me
I feel like it's a trick, too, because what was it, A.G. Sean
she's
Reyes?
Trying to,
did he
she's
rap?
Trying to
he
crash
He rapped
my
it at a
MC.
Stage event while he was running.
Yeah, and I don't know if that really was like the best
but
press,
Greg,
so maybe no.
Greg is a lot more talented.
No, I won't. You will not. You're not tricking me, Mara. I know exactly what you're trying to do. Trying to ruin this for me. No, I won't
YouTube.
Do that.
We could use it on the podcast next week
oh,
if you
nice.
Do.
Nice, yes.
Nope, not going to happen.
It'll be our open music.
I won't do it.
Anyhow, it'll be interesting to watch because Senator Mike Lee, well ahead, I think he's fundraised maybe $4 million for this race altogether. He spent a bunch, and I forget how much he has left. The last quarter, when you look at it, he was outfunded or outfundraised by Evan McMullen. So we'll see how this all
goes.
Yeah,
it doesn't. I'm not worried at all.
I hope that you don't cost him any money tonight.
No.
With your jokes.
I hope. Well, they're not like canned jokes. I'm just going freestyle. That's all.
Okay. You know? Are they giving away dogs tonight at all? I only asked because I was the MC of a benefit once. And you know, the read the room thing? They brought it up and it was an auction. And the audience was so dead. They just were not there with us. And so I was holding this puppy and I joked that I'd throw it out into the audience if someone wanted to hold it or like try it out. People lost their minds.
I feel like I was at that fundraiser,
you were there?
I think.
Or did you feel uncomfortable?
No.
It was the University of Utah fundraiser.
Yes.
Like for medicine of some
no,
sort.
No, but I think things like that are funny.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Because we're always, it was the end of the night. People have been drinking a lot. Usually, you know, you can loosen up then. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Not happening.
Yeah. So anyhow, don't even like.
No dog
Don't even
jokes.
Joke that way.
No
that you're
dog
throw
jokes.
A dog.
Okay.
Yes. I was really not going to throw the dog. Just
so how much
know.
Is the fundraiser? Is this going to be a hoity-toity
tonight?
Crowd?
Yeah. I think it's
you guys are fancy.
$1,000. I think I saw some email. It was.
Yeah, that's what I think.
Is it a fancy crowd or is it the everyday American?
That's just fancy to me because I don't know if I like anyone enough to spend $1,000.
Greg, you're not that. You're not bringing in these big names to talk to everyday America.
No.
Yeah, you are. Those are everybody loves them. They are great leaders.
Samara, would you I like agree. To go spend $1,000 tonight?
Well, oh she, my gosh. Everything I they am say, washing she's
my
on the
hair yeah. tonight.
She just, I have truth is have like that's anathema to Mara. She just runs from the truth. Yes. She doesn't want to hear the truth.
I'm going to go into some liberal bubble tonight and do whatever liberal bubble people do.
Yeah, you.
All right, 248 days till the election. Mara came in here really prepared. Before we move on, yeah. you were looking at the list because while people are filing today, there's been some shifts. So people who might have thought they could run where they normally did had to, you know, walk over a couple streets or change around. Were there any surprises when you looked at it?
No, not that. So Heidi's talking about I printed out the filing list. So ooh. You have to have filed for your office by 5 o'clock today.
Yep.
And there's been a little kerfuffle with current legislators. It puts a lot of pressure on them to have to file last week of the session.
That's never happened before.
And yeah, and to figure that out. So I was just seeing if there was anything unexpected. I don't know that there is. I think one thing is there's a lot of contested races. There's some inter-party contested, and almost everyone has a couple of people. Greg and I were talking about this, the United Party. Is that what they're
United
called?
Utah Party?
Yeah, they have some showers. I mean, they clearly made an effort to get folks out and filed this year. You know, it looks like on our federal districts, the federal, Chris Stewart has two, Erin Ryder, who is a Republican and she is an attorney, and then J-Mac, those of you who listen to KSL, J-Mac, and he is running again. So, I'm not calling odds on win-loss, but that's an active race. Those are people who are going
active.
To...
That is active. And did J-Mac run against Burgess Owens last time? I did all these
interviews.
That was the same race. The fourth district. Because that was a busy... There were a lot of people running
so he's
that.
Moved up to Chris Stewart's seat. And then the House and Senate... And then the House and Senate does have a couple of Republican inner parties. There's some open seats. I think a senior member of the Republican Party, Tim Hawks, isn't running for re-election.
That's right.
We've got a couple of senators. Janie Awamoto's not running again. So there's some others.
Representative Stephanie Pitcher in the House has moved is into that. Going to run for Senator Iwamoto's seat.
As are three or four other people.
Yeah, that is so, not going. That they're not giving that seat away. No. So she's got some competition inside the Democrat Party.
I think we're going to have a rigorous local election. So what I want to start watching for is... Yeah, the federal government stuff's going to be interesting about who wins House and Senate and all that. And what happens to the run-up to the presidential. But I would just remind us, I think the local House races and Senate races are going to be interesting.
So, another one, I don't often notice the races in the Democrat side that I think are going to be barn burners, but here's one, Derek Kitchen versus Jen Plum,
right.
Dr. Plum.
So that's a sitting senator who's being challenged inside the party, the Democratic Party.
Yes, and Dr. Plum has been an advocate on the on behavioral health, addiction, teaching people how to use, what's the thing that you can... The adrenaline,
Narcan
that you can, the adrenaline to help save people's lives if they're having an overdose. She's already been a citizen soldier and has given so much to the community. That race will be interesting to watch because there's redistricting that plays into that as well. That district does not look like the same one that Senator Kitchen won when he ran for the first time 4 years ago. So watch that race.
Some displeasure, like nothing specific, but just general displeasure with maybe some of the things he's been doing. I don't know if the specifics are.
Well, there was some drama with
he was
Senator Kitchen
from his committees, right?
And Senator Reby, in particular this session, over some politics, wrangling and leadership within the minority party and some of the decisions they made that the senators on the whole thought were... we're not of good taste or good process. So anyway, that's kind of inside baseball. We'll see how that race plays out on the mean streets of that district.
And speaking of doctors, Suzanne Harrison, she's going from the House to running to the open seat in the council in Salt Lake County.
The countywide seat. It's held right now by Richard Snellgrove. He's an incumbent. He has a great last name. I mean, if we look at last name, recognition is a really huge step to getting reelected. And Richard Snellgrove has really high name ID. Suzanne Harrison is known for being a voracious worker, right? She will knock and raise money and have at it. But I will say the countywide seat this year is going to be a tough one. And so this will be a pretty big battle. It's an interesting move, too. I support the move because it shows how important the county government is. Mm-hmm. Salt Lake County is the second largest government in the state, and it actually fills the gap. If at the top of your list is arts and open space and things like that, the county actually fills that funding gap more than the state does. And so it becomes a really important governmental structure. And the Republicans have had a foothold like they've never had in the last kind of 18 months.
They have. They gained a seat last election. They have a larger majority on the council.
So that'll be quite. And she'll represent a lot more. It's a lot more expensive to run countywide. People shouldn't underestimate because of the household density. Mm. You really have to raise a ton of money. So she jumped. She got redistricted and she has jumped to a county race.
It's interesting to watch because I look at her, I look at all these other doctors, lawyers, whatever you are, and I'm like, first of all, how do you go home and be a mom or a dad, work and be a surgeon, and then on the side run for office? So
right.
Good on all of you.
It is a
this.
Family enterprise, right?
Yes, I mean, absolutely.
Yeah, they don't spend, their family really is who takes a sacrifice.
Absolutely. So
it's true. It is.
Has your family sacrificed, or has it been like a nice break when you run?
They were like, "Thank goodness!" Well, here's another seat you can run for.
My children were so young when I ran; they didn't know what life with me not running or being a public servant even felt like. So they didn't have anything to compare it to. But they're older now. I mean, I just have my youngest is a senior in high school now, and so. But you know what? I'm enjoying this new season of my life, and I loved my time in service, and I still love public policy. I'm not wishing that I was still a House member right now. I'm watching these filings and I'm not saying, oh, I wish I was filing right now. I'm actually glad I'm not.
All right.
Yeah.
It's a nice relaxing feeling, I guess, when you don't have to go out and knock doors. You can do whatever you want in your sweatpants on Saturday. I want to talk a little bit about the State of the Union, which already feels like it was a month ago, but that was this week.
Was there a State of the Union?
There was.
Did that even happen?
All right. Well, I guess we're not talking to you. Mara, did you watch?
That's my commentary.
And did you get what you wanted from the president?
You know, I'm gonna toe a really pendant line, which is to say, I think he did what he needed to do. It was not the best speech we've ever heard in history, but it was good. The opener was good. The closer was a little softer than it needed to be. I thought that he really did what he needed to. And for President Biden, I think it was a pretty good speech. He had a lot of energy in his voice. If you just look at it from the craftsmanship of delivery, he sort of clapped and did everything he needed to do. So one thing I want to bring up that I've been talking about this week that was more interesting to me than sort of the normal punditry on the State of the Union.
The faces of the women behind
him? The women behind him were doing some weird stuff. I was like, what? So Kamala Harris looked like she was reading along on the teleprompter. So note to the vice president, don't read along. And Nancy Pelosi, I just couldn't figure out sometimes what she was doing.
She was like creepy smiling sometimes. Like it was like the two different faces. And I never want to be in a rally,
right,
whether you're at church or you're at the State of the Union. Because if you're sitting right behind the speaker, you've got to make sure you know what your face is doing.
That's right, all the time.
But Nancy was crazy smiling. I should call her Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi. And then the vice president, I think she was trying so hard to be businesslike that she never looked pleasant or showed her teeth to smile. It was always like these scrunched up faces. Maybe it was the teleprompter reading.
Yeah, I did get distracted by what was going on.
Yes.
I got to tell you, I have experience in this. Nobody watches the State of the State when the governor does it.
Right.
But I sit behind him as well as the speaker, as well as the Senate president. And to your point, Heidi, and my wife would say, because my wife would sit with me and the president, Senate president's wife sits next to him, and she'd say,
or
where's
she
your phone?
Sits next to, he sits next to her.
Well, I'm talking about my experience.
She would take
president
your phone
President Niederhauser
from you?
And his spouse and me and my wife.
Right.
She's like, where's your phone? Because I know you will look at it while this is going on, and everyone will see you just looking at your phone instead of paying attention. It does take... distract me at some time.
There's not enough action going on with the speaker you're watching, so you
ready
do start
that.
Looking around.
I do read the teleprompter. I'd read his whole speech while he's giving it. I would read the whole teleprompter the whole time.
Yeah, but your lips didn't move.
No, they didn't move.
Well, I do have to applaud the president for, I guess, not going after anything crazy controversial. He didn't talk January 6th. He didn't talk specifics on some of the things he wanted passed that had failed. But the interesting, because I think the country right now needs something to just be agreeable on. The one thing I thought was weird, though, is while he didn't specifically name them, I felt like he was repitching some of the things that Congress has already looked at and given him a hard no vote or skipped over on, and he still really wants the human infrastructure package. Is that the feeling you got, Mara, when you listened?
I think it wasn't subliminal. I think he really did want to reassert it. I think from their calculus that they were pretty close on components. I don't think anyone thinks the totality is going to come forth again.
Yeah.
But I think there were components that he is still not ready to let go of. It's an unusual position to be in. Usually you've wiped the board by this and you move on to a new board. He chose not to do it, but I think it was an intentional calculus. I don't think it was, you know, whether it works or not, I think it was intentional.
I think the most important part of his speech, and all kidding aside, I think it's important to watch our president's State of the Union without regard to party affiliation. The first part with speaking about Russia and Ukraine and the tragedy that that whole situation is and what's happening there, I think people wanted to hear the perspective and kind of hear from our president. After that, I think he mailed it in, with the exception of he's kind of really pivoted away from defunding the police and really spent some time talking about funding the police and restoring public safety, which, in fairness, I think is a different narrative.
Joe Biden has never been anti-law enforcement. You can talk about the Democrats. He lets a lot of that rhetoric go by in 2020 that he never corrected. AOC, you can talk about the left-wing.
He never corrected some of those narratives in that race.
Joe Biden has been as pro-law enforcement
as any elected official.
So it would be entirely unfair to say Joe Biden pivoted on
I'll give you that as a senator he was, but not as a candidate for president.
Joe Biden has supported law enforcement.
I think he's been more quiet on it. I think that's why it was probably important for him to say that because...
See, Heidi heard me.
I think he probably ran more centrist as a Democrat than the others. It was a very left-leaning race, and I think that he's adopted a lot as president, even though he ran as a more centrist Democrat. He's adopted a lot more of what you could call the left wing of the party's stances, and so I think maybe people were wondering, would he go that way?
No, I think this was Joe going back to Joe land, right? Yeah. As a centrist person myself, I liked that he essentially said, listen, I'm going back to my sweet spot, which is get something done guy.
The only reason he got the nomination was because that's who people thought he was.
And I hope he doubles down on being productive over setting up the Democrats in the partisan way. And somebody's got to do it, but I hope it's not President
Biden. Well, it hasn't worked. There's no one that thinks that the midterms are going to treat the Democrats very well. And he went all in on that leftist agenda when he got elected, and it's not worked. It's not produced anything, but I think problems. So I think he's got to go back to old centrist Joe. That's why he got elected. I remember when we talked about that race, and there was someone that was clearly way to the left, but said, we have to get Biden or we won't win. We can't, we have to have someone that's closer to the center. So, but he hasn't governed closer to the center since he's been elected. He's allowed that left wing of the party to kind of drive their agenda. I think that there is that attempt at a reset.
Yeah, it'll be interesting because the Democrats are more centrist right now than the Republicans are. And I think that's probably good for both parties going into the midterms.
Speaking of centrist,
we'll never get to a news topic because you just say things that just
No, that was agreed. I wasn't.
You were, but I'm telling you that the Republican Party is more for the everyday American people than the Democrats ever were historically.
Okay, see, I'll let that go.
Were you guys happy to see Senator Mitt Romney and Manchin sitting together? I always watched to see who their guests were, but because of COVID protocols that are essentially gone because we made it to the State of the Union, they couldn't. But
I just can't tell if that means that Romney's going to vote left or if that means Manchin's going to vote right.
Please.
I just don't
this
know who's influencing who in
Greg
that.
And
in
I.
That,
you know what happened? And Manchin explained it. He said, you know what? We just wanted to show that it's bipartisan. That's all that it was. It was a good. It was
who's
nice.
Influencing who in that
it
little.
It was nice. Who
I think
cares?
Romney invited Manchin to next to him. But when you watch the two shots, depending on like who was taking them, they were definitely, aside from Ukraine, standing at different times and clapping at different times.
Yeah, no, they are who they are, but good for them for showing what Greg says he talks about all the time, which is you can be friends. You can respect and appreciate each other.
Before we move on from this topic, I do want to ask you about the Boebert outburst. I think a lot of people were hoping the president would in some way address Afghanistan. Obviously, they avoided it for reasons that it's not very popular to talk about. Was it wrong for that outburst to happen in what is supposed to be a dignified?
Yes. And I'll tell you, I think you need to maintain a level of decorum. I mean, there are applause lines and there are things like that. And I think that outburst period, regardless of who's holding what party holds the presidency at that time, I just don't think they're appropriate. However, we give a lot of attention when there's a Democrat president to those outbursts. But when we hear them or see them and there's a Republican president, I don't see everybody, there's no pearl clutching when it happens on the other side. It's it seemed to be accepted more often. So anyway, I don't like outbursts, period.
It's true. Nancy Pelosi ripped up Trump's speech, too. And I'm
There's theatrics. And I just never see anyone get as upset garbage. When it's a Republican president like I do when it's a Democrat president. Because I remember when there was an outburst when President Obama was giving his speech as well. But I don't see an even-handed application of decorum about decorum.
This continued selling of victimization of Republicans, I think it's just awesome.
It's not victimization to call balls and strikes. I'm calling balls and strikes here. That's all I'm doing. I'm just saying. But selective logic,
here's the one
selective
thing,
outrage.
What I'd like
and I'm
to
not.
See about
I
this,
try to call
it
even.
Tended by everyone to come back on the heckler, and I think that's where it should be.
All right.
Whoever it is, that was not a partisan statement. It's just I like that the blowback
hecklers
was on the
can
hecklers.
Go either way.
Hecklers can go either
yes.
way.
All right. This is something I didn't expect to have in the news this week, but a no confidence declaration. It's not a vote. It's a declaration from former prosecutors in the Utah County Prosecutor's Office. They filed a letter against the current Utah County Attorney, David Levitt, saying that they don't have confidence in the way they're running their office. They're saying that police officers don't have confidence. They're saying prosecutors are leaving because of this. I'm trying to decide. I'm going to let you go first, Greg, on this one.
There's no one that would say you have to do this. For this to rise this level and to see that this is happening, I think there is a problem in that office.
So you don't think it's politics?
Well, it will certainly color the politics, and I think that they know that it will, but I think it's serious enough that they think that something like this has to be done. This isn't something you see. This isn't part of the campaign elections process. This is outside of that. And for people to put their names to this and to really make this kind of a statement, a strong statement, I believe there are some authentic and genuine concerns that these former prosecutors want people to know.
I agree.
So what do we do about it?
This is noteworthy because I asked several people, and none of us have seen this before. So this is noteworthy. I mean, so aside from whatever the grievances are, you have to listen to how unusual this is. It's particularly unusual because several of these people are no longer within the constraints of the office. So, I mean, they don't maybe benefit necessarily from this. Also that the police also had a vote of no confidence. That's a little more regular just for viewers watching.
That's true.
Those unions often exercise a voice of no confidence, but to have
which is
rank
important,
and file
but
members,
you've seen it before.
Yeah, and it matters, but you've seen it before. The question will be what you said, Heidi, who does what after? Because it's not a legal action. It's truly well said in that it's a vote of no confidence.
So they want us to investigate and look more into it and figure out what it is.
It's a way to bring attention to what they see as a problem. They're raising either an ethics or a procedural flag, but it has no teeth. So the answer to what's next is pretty wide open, and it'll see whether it happens politically, whether it happens procedurally. But this is to note because I can't find anyone who thinks that this is average.
Yeah, you don't see this.
Maybe I don't talk to enough prosecutors, but I haven't ever heard it.
No, there's a weight to it because of it. It doesn't happen. So it needs to be, you can't blow it off and you can't just slough it off as, oh, this is the silly season of politics. Not, this is actually not, that's not what, this doesn't happen. So
we got to look
take
into
note.
It. And the interesting thing is too, as you mentioned, I think over the years I've heard from police often because I think they're the ones on the ground digging, working on these cases sometimes for years. And when they don't get picked up or carried or it just gets let go, I think there's an overwhelming frustration with prosecutors sometimes or the district attorney, but this seems to go beyond that,
right,
like you said. So, all right, we're going to be keeping a close eye on that and see what happens next. The legislative session, as we're recording, it's 3:08 p.m. on a Friday, so they've got almost 9 hours left. I think there was 130 bills they were starting the day out with. They'd be talking about, I want to go over your personal hits and misses before we move on to some of the things going through. Did you have any big hits where you're like, home run, Greg, home run?
Well, there was an extraordinary amount of what they call surplus. Taxpayers paid more money into the state coffers than what fiscal analysts predicted or projected would be received. That's what a surplus is. The way that the legislature, they cut taxes at the beginning of the session, and then they are, I think, in historic ways, funding some critical infrastructure issues. There's a lot of that budget had $2 billion in surplus. And I think they're picking very smart ways to invest in the state and its growth. And so I think that's a hit. I think that's a good thing. Or Yeah, that's a hit. I was thinking, this no. hit sounds pejorative, but it's not a miss. Yeah. It's a hit. Yeah.
I do hope we're using the money wisely, because I know a lot of it is coming from federal money and dollars too, which is part of what's probably feeding the inflation. So if we're going to have inflation, let's use the money wisely. Are you the same hit, or is that a big miss for you?
No, same hit, in that one of the things we did well is fund in large amounts. So Utah came in to the federal money, the COVID money, the three tranches really of federal money, I believe with a critical mindset, which is to say, we are in the fortunate position of having planned well, and we don't necessarily need to pay for day-to-day infrastructure. So, hey, let's not do that. Let's go in with big generational things. Let's go in with some big ticket items. And I think they've done that really well. And I think we have spent our surplus really well. It would be a small miss for me in that I still think you should have targeted the tax cut, but, you know, that we've discussed, and it's okay. So I
targeted
think those were,
as in the food tax.
Yes, I would have had it more towards the lower end of the economic spectrum. I think that by and large the upper end is doing just fine. So, but I think overall the big hit was it is really hard to spend that much money. I mean, that's a first class problem to have. But it is harder to be smart when you have too much. And we had so many good projects come forth. And I think by and large that we did that well, or it appears, I should say, is that we've done that well.
All right, Mara goes first on the misses.
The misses for me are if we pass. So right now the targeting of transgender kids and their playing sports is sitting on a reading calendar, and it's currently circled. But we know it's being talked about. And it will be a huge miss if Utah joins the vitriol against a very small number of people who are children who have never done anything. And I think in a state like Utah, who often leads with their religion, I would just say that God supports the oppressed. So,
and what does circled mean for people who don't hang on the hill and like to listen to us?
So, you know, in the Senate, you have to go through several reading calendars, and part of what happens is sometimes they'll circle a bill which puts a hold on its discussion. Now, sometimes that could be death. I mean, often, often the read is, you've been nicely told no. But every once in a while, it does mean people are conferencing about it. It does mean that you're close to getting it passed, but maybe a one or two lines need to be changed, or there's a number that needs to be changed. So in this, I'm hoping it was a nice death march, but I'm not sure if it is. Another miss for me is we funded all day kindergarten, but I don't want people to miss
sort of, right?
Like the list will read that we passed all day kindergarten and it got funded. It really only got funded at a nominal level. And I think that in a year where we have that, it was a miss to not fund all day kindergarten at a higher level. So
people are looking at the numbers. I think you said there was $90 million originally.
I think that's right. Sort of ended at 18 or 19 million, if I remember right.
So more kids will have the opportunity, but not all kids.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. And finally, for me, I think it was I'm going to double back. Since I'm in the miss category, I'm going to give like six negatives. I think it was a miss to even have a voucher bill, and it was a hit that it got buried pretty quick by a pretty diverse coalition, including the Eagle Forum, which was not supportive of the Hope Scholarship voucher bill.
That surprises me. And I know you supported the Hope Scholarship, which is really just a voucher. Was the Hope Scholarship names like a rebranding, kind of when we went from Kentucky Fried Chicken to KFC, where we felt like,
for some,
this
it might
help
be.
Me now. Yeah.
It is. It's probably to the core of what it's meant to be. It's supposed to help fund students and not necessarily systems. I thought there was an interesting, public education enjoyed a historic year of funding, so it's not one's being ignored while one's being focused on. There are a lot of frustrated parents over the last 2 to 3 years of the school years that we've had. There are people that are looking for different options for their students or for their kids and how the education's delivered, and that this was supposed to be a flexible voucher, and that it could be for tutoring, it could be for different things that a family would determine that would be in the best interest of their child and their education. The last version of that bill, because the usual argument against it is you can't take money away from public education, which is not, and they argue it's underfunded. But by the way, 50 states will argue that their education system is underfunded without regard to what that number is. So sometimes that's a circular argument, but the argument has been that you can't take away from that system to fund a voucher, because you're hurting the public education system that the kids that are staying in it are going to receive. The last bill had an amendment that if the student exercised the voucher, the funding for that student would still go to the public school. So if you had the money that would go to the school without the student, that would be more funding for that, for the education system. And so the argument that you're hurting public education was gone. And yet, even with that change, it did not receive the support. So there's always this good reasons and real reasons. This boils down to a turf battle. Right now, public education, they fund 97% of school-aged children in the state of Utah because we don't have as many private schools, parochial private schools. And there is a belief that this turf of 97% of the kids, they don't want any less than 97% to be inside our public schools. And that's turf they don't want treaded on. And that's because once you can get more money for the school, if the student doesn't go, that argument about underfunding the school is gone.
I think you need to work on public sentiment. A lot like I think the Supreme Court, while they make good judicial decisions,
yeah.
I sometimes think those judicial decisions come when they know that the American public is ready for it.
Yeah, so I thought this was the year. I thought there was a lot of frustration where this would be a year where that would happen. And I was wrong.
Yeah, I mean, this is an old school. This is a blunt object. Specialized attention if your school's not doing what your student needs to do, and how do parents? I think that problem is worthy, and I think this is like all a 1987 solution, and so it feels old. I will say who joined Greg in supporting the bill was the religious parochial affiliated school I am with, and I have never seen them lobbying anything. And I got email after email telling me to go all in on the Hope Scholarship.
Good.
So they too, this religious institution, was very excited to receive taxpayer dollars.
Let me float something by your listeners, because anyone listening to this podcast, I think they like a deeper dive into politics and issues. Okay,
that's what we're gonna say.
So since we're on the topic of religion, everyone in public schools and public education will admit the fact that you have LDS, Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, have seminary buildings across the street from their high schools, which is very unique to our state, and that there are a portion of students who go for a period of their school day, some number of those students that go there instead of staying inside the school, has saved public education hundreds of millions of dollars. So in other words, if you wiped out seminary buildings and said, we're not doing it anymore, there would be a fiscal impact to public education, because those students that don't have a classroom or a teacher in front of them that go to the seminary would be full-time back into the public school. If we know that there would be a hit financially to our public schools if you ended the seminaries, then why would it not be a continued benefit for public education if it was just more than one seminary class? If it was that student went all day to a different school instead of just one period to the seminary? It's math. It really does. It really is. That you will not find one public school that would want you to get rid of seminary. Not because they like the religious instruction, but because of the fiscal hit it would have on public education.
I think it's negligible. I mean, you're talking about square footage and a rotation in a student schedule. So you're acting like it is.
You ask them if it's negligible. It's not. It's a big number.
I mean, we can absorb that. I do not think the state of Utah is being floated by the seminary system.
I didn't say it's wholly dependent on it. I said it's like a $200 million statewide hit.
And I think we've used it. I think we've used this mixing, which one could still argue shouldn't be the premise, but we've used this mixing to our advantage. But I think to say it's what's propping up the system, no. I didn't say it's propping it up.
I'm just saying if you can acknowledge that it would have a hit negatively if it wasn't there, how can we not acknowledge it would be a benefit if it was more than just one period? If it was the school instead of the class, if there's a hit negatively back to the school if you ended it, if you had the student going more than one class, why isn't that a benefit?
It is an interesting concept. I'm going to look into this a little more. You may have opened my mind slightly.
I'm telling you.
I'm not.
It's math. I'm telling you, it works. The math works.
I am not a math major, though. Did you have any misses, Greg?
Well,
that
Hope Scholarship that I just spent all that time praising and thinking this
was
its moment.
That was your big miss.
22 out of 75 members in the House that only received 22 votes. I was very, very disappointed by that. That was a big miss. I'm glad actually they had the debate. I'm glad that bill didn't stay circled and unknown. I think there ought to be transparency on where lawmakers are on that issue. But I was surprised at its lack of support.
Can I bring up one interesting bill that we don't have to talk about it, and then one late breaker today?
Let's do it.
So one interesting bill. I have always found it really interesting that Utah is sort of the homeland of alternative medicine. And it's always live hand in glove. When I brought this up with someone the other day, they mentioned that apparently Joseph Smith liked alternative medicine. I don't know. I'm speaking a little out of school here. But the shroom bill, the magic shroom bill, got sent to study. So we are going to study psychedelic mushrooms
in an interim committee.
Isn't it interesting, though? I'm just saying, I find this so interesting.
This is just, I mean.
I'm with you, Greg, but apparently Southern Utah, St. George, has become quite a mega center for having exploration via psychedelic mushroom. So we have sent that to an interim committee. And we have a group of psychologists, psychiatrists, medical doctors who are going to study the medical effect of the mushroom. So I'm just throwing that out of this.
I think it is interesting, but when I generally think about alternative medicine, which I think I've kind of like...
You're more into herbs?
Yeah, yes, I'm into more herbs and like let thy food be thy medicine and their medicine be thy food kind of thing. I've never thought about magic mushrooms, but admittedly... I don't even know if I can say these things out loud, but there's someone I know that I'm friends with whose husband works in a field that it would not be acceptable. You can imagine what field this would be to admit that you have mental health problems it could be bad for your record, bad for your job. And this person, I don't know if they do it now, but they have in the past treated themselves with magic mushrooms. It deals with their problems. They feel better again for a few months till they have to take another week off work and do magic mushrooms.
I think we're going to hear about it more.
It feels crazy, though. So who would have thought of all the states when we have not like gone for the recreational marijuana that all of a sudden we're like,
have you ever heard someone who's like subscribed to this and what they go through and what they experience? It is crazy town. I'm
like
telling
psycho,
you, it's
like
weird.
You might need someone like outside the locked door where
right,
you're doing
you need to. Well, so one thing I'll give this, it is a bipartisan experience. Like it's all, interesting. It's interesting who is into this. It's anyway. So that's one thing I'm just going to say passed and is being explored.
It's an interim
the
study.
The second thing
it's
today.
It's the land of misfit bills.
I know, but it's like money being spent on it though, right? How much are we spending on this?
I don't know what the fiscal, well, I think it's just a,
no,
I
it's
think
just,
they had to
study it in
put together
that's
a study
kind
okay.
of
professionals.
Punt.
And they really emphasized in the bill, the, science medical part. I'm just sharing with you what the bill said. And so I think that's really interesting. The other thing is I always like to see, Greg knows this is better than I do, but always on the last day, there's one or two super quirky issues that get really hot because you're running out of time. I don't know that they're
and everyone's tired.
They're grumpy and like they just, I don't know that they even deserve the airtime. It's just that it's so tense. So today what I hear that is just like ranking everybody in the hallways is this bill about having a secondary licensing category for massage therapists. So you wouldn't have to do as many hours as a regular massage therapist. You would be like a massage therapist assistant or something, and you could do less hours. It is a battle royale right now. And isn't it interesting? I just want to point out the ebb and flow. Like, there are people really, and so from what I understand, the sides are sort
well,
of.
Well, we don't
the,
have enough massage therapists. We got to create another category.
I just am saying
I'm
it's
assuming
the heated
it's
issue
who
right now.
People who want to work in it, they don't want to put in as many hours,
right.
Probably
against the schools. So the schools who are, you're doing lots of hours versus the people who want to do a little less. So that seems to be a hot issue.
I'll just say this. That is actually just an example of a broader issue that comes up every legislative session, and that is healthcare delivery or licensed practice, whatever it is that the state says, this is the license and these are how many hours you have to go through it. But particularly in this health and wellness space, these turf wars are
intense.
They are more cruel and more contentious than Crips versus Blood. I mean, these things are wars. You take registered nurses versus physician assistants. They go at each other's throats. You go ophthalmologists. What are they called?
Ophthalmologists
versus optometrists.
Yeah.
They're fighting. I mean, I'm talking. They're gonna physically fight each other up.
I know.
That Capitol
seriously.
Hill.
I know that when I go get my hair, like get a blow. I was gonna say a blow. That was the wrong term. A blowout. I want that person licensed.
Yes.
Just kidding. I don't care. But. But these are things, and when you think about massage therapy, there's people who can go in there and really probably do good medical things to make you feel better.
I only want to license one like the way they do it now to be...
Someone who just squishes your fat around and like...
Jeez.
I'm speaking for myself.
I just don't even like
sorry,
the topic.
I didn't mean to make this go off the rails. But I just, like, it's interesting what gets heated. Greg's totally right. These, someday someone should line up, though, the requirements, because they're all over the place. Like, wasn't it a couple years ago that people who cut hair, stylist had to...
Oh, yeah.
It was like 12 years of college and then
hair.
Something else.
Yeah. I mean, I had the straight-faced argument that it is dangerous for your health if you have someone that doesn't have a license in cosmetology to braid your hair, because they'll make it too tight and it'll just disconnect the blood flow to the hair follicle or whatever, and it's all going to fall out. If you braid hair without a cosmetology license, you're
I miss
you're
the
gonna,
80s where we would
people
go to
are going
to
walk around bald.
My mom
That's
would
the
give
argument.
Me perms in our basement.
Mm-hmm.
It looked like my mom gave
with
me a
the
perm
fumes.
In my basement.
I'm telling you, everybody fights over this stuff. It's a never-ending battle.
So
it's
it looks
turf
like
war.
Things are also taken care of. I'm hearing over and over that we may not make it till midnight. The volume was heavy, but not usual. I mean, they weren't scrambling around today. In fact, they delayed some floor time. It felt kind of managed to me, Greg. Managed chaos. It's fast. Things are moving quickly. But it doesn't seem, some just seem like they have impossible hills to climb and that they won't even make it till midnight. I think, you know, they were keeping up with each other's bills. So remember, this is the day that they send bills back and forth a lot. And it seemed like both houses were keeping up with the bills. And
has the vaccine passport made it across the finish line after the early craziness this week? I haven't even looked at what number that was, if it passed. I think it was 313.
Look it up this
hour. I'm not sure.
Oh, no, wait, that was a different bill. But anyhow, I need to see where that one went.
House wanted that to go back to its substitute, I think second substitute that they sent it to the Senate with, and then the Senate would like to keep its sixth or seventh substitute, whatever one they substituted into. So there's some philosophical issues between the two, but I think something will pass. It's just a matter of which version.
Were they being too heavy-handed? I didn't even see what happened.
100%
yes. The guy was wearing a sticker that said, was it vote no or vote yes?
Vote yes on HB 60 was the sticker.
It felt a little psycho to me. I don't know what he said.
The first three words
things.
Of the preamble of our Constitution, we the people, was on the T-shirt that the man was ordered to leave the committee room while he was wearing it. I actually, the chair of that Senate committee, Senator Dan McKay, is a friend of mine. I watched that, and I don't know that he would recognize him. I think this is a long session. I think they got to get out of here today, and they got to be done. Someone's going to put an eye out. Someone's going to – I mean, this plane's got to land. Nerves are frayed. Stress must be so high. That committee was a disgrace. I'm sorry. It was bad. But I don't think that Dan would recognize himself on day one of this session to see himself on day 42 running a committee like that.
You have to also hold the crowd accountable. We're getting really obnoxious with each other. We got to figure out a way to
You're right, Mara.
You know, we just have to figure out a way to go back to good old fashioned.
Some of the public are trying to weaponize public hearings in a way to shut down business, and you can't have that. But I don't think
that
was the case.
And that may have been happening. I didn't see.
It wasn't the case in this one. In fact, they were in a recess when this thing went off the rails.
But there was chanting earlier, and there was.
But they recessed to give people an opportunity to take the stickers off, and most were taking their stickers off. They were in a recess, but there were some that were loud and vocal about complaining about having to do that.
Like, no one said.
They were in recess
anymore. We got to cut that out.
All I know is, and I don't know if this, I've heard this secondhand, but the gentleman that they arrested, they charged with a Class B misdemeanor. Mm-hmm. I just hope that's dropped, and I hope that we're going to lower the temperature. Let's let the public hearings come. Let's have them. You're going to have people very passionate about issues. That's why the troopers were in attendance. But I would hope no one would have to be straddled with a Class B misdemeanor for at least what I saw. I've seen some public hearings where people are gluing themselves to the wall and defecating inside the building. And there's some crazy things that have gone on. That's not what happened.
Okay, I
want to
finish.
Hearing.
I have a question for Greg Hughes. So yesterday the big bill comes out, right? $25 billion is in our budget.
Yes.
There's a really interesting marker in there, and I don't know what it's about. So there's a $1 billion infrastructure that's going to UDOT that has very little information about it. And Greg's in the super know. I'm not suspect of it. I trust UDOT, and I trust the bill of bills, and I trust infrastructure.
Trust
but what
no
is
one.
That money going to?
Very good causes.
I knew you knew what's it going to.
Yeah, like the words.
It's $1 billion.
Yeah, it's transportation. You'll
like
see.
What kind of transportation?
Give us some words
well,
to
I
go
think
with
that.
That.
Well, I think that why you saw it, not prescriptive, but you saw that UDOT's, you're seeing that money set aside, is that there's a programming list. And this allows for lit construction projects, road construction projects that are on the list, and they're kind of scheduled out over a number of years. This allows for existing projects to be started sooner and be able to get through that list in a quicker way than
like they're going
to
bump up our potholes or something bigger.
Bigger.
Now they want no details so that they can speak to
need. Well, here's the problem politically. When you get details, you start getting regional and you start getting into these,
Gotcha.
You know, it just becomes, it becomes more, not pork, because we need infrastructure everywhere, but if you just empower our state, our departments to get this right, get these roads right, I think there's this belief that they can get that programming list and start getting and notching down those projects. They're already on there and they've gone through the scrutiny, get them done faster and not have kind of the provincialism that comes with the legislative process about which region, which area,
just never who has the most votes. Done this way. It was a big line item with not a lot of words attached.
Yeah. And we're so out of time, but I do have a quick question that maybe you guys can give some clarity on because I have not been up at the Hill. But just starting yesterday, I started hearing rumblings and sort of meetings off the campus of the Hill, people talking about House Bill 440, and this is funding for homelessness, but part of that bill would be that Salt Lake County would have to pick an overflow shelter. If they didn't within a certain amount of time, the state would do it for them, and that was just one piece of a much larger bill. Mara, do you know much about this? Because it seems like there is some backdoor dealings and squawking and not happiness about what's going on here.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, this is chapter 27 in the saga of bureaucracy in our homeless situation. So what's frustrating to me is the number of homeless people we have and people who are experiencing homelessness are small enough to solve the problem. We continue to pass the ball around on who's taking the lead. And that's fair to some degree. It's a multi-jurisdictional issue. It's a multi-agency issue. I'm not trying to oversimplify it. But I think you're right. This is just another chapter of slight confusion, people not wanting to take responsibility. We definitely need more facilities applied. When Ben McAdams and Greg Hughes made a run at it, one of the things that they wanted were more facilities, and that only got half done, and half done things exacerbate problems. That's not an accusation. I think everyone has that same assessment. And I appreciate that we want to put more money, but what I haven't seen is more defined leadership, and that continues to frustrate me.
So the structure of the whole the resource centers, that they weren't called shelters on purpose. Resource centers were meant to help get people in and through. This wasn't your permanent address. This wasn't just the place you can live, because they knew that the beds, the number, the capacity of each of these resource centers was highly negotiated, and there were MOUs and signed agreements. And they wanted the pressure. And when I say they, I'm talking the state, the city, the service providers, the pressure of having to help people and move them successfully through to self-reliance because they knew there'd be people behind them that would need help. The tragedy of that model that I just described is it was never funded that way. It would take a higher level of funding of how to help people individually like that, that it never received. It received the funding that would be the equivalent of a shelter. Now, because they didn't do it that way, now because they're crowded, and especially when the winter months and the cold months come, and you're not moving people through.
They just need to warehouse people.
And so the worst part about that bill for me, I understand the motivation. I do think there needs to be an overflow shelter, particularly in the cold months. But if you go above those negotiated capacity numbers in those resource centers and you get more and more people, it's what I've seen, that the anonymity and not knowing who people are is where the wolves sneak in. It's where the people that prey on those that are vulnerable come in to sell drugs. The human trafficking, the drug trafficking, they thrive in an atmosphere of large numbers and anonymity. And that's what they're going to introduce to every one of these resource centers, is anonymity. If they push it 35% over the allotted number that they have right now, the individualized care becomes that much harder when you get the numbers that high, and it works absolutely against the model that we were hoping to arrive at, which was individualized care. So it's a frustrating area.
It feels like we're back policy. To bean counting and arresting our way out. Instead,
I hate
the other thing is this has
beings.
Been exacerbated in part because of people living on the margins who have lost their homes because of COVID difficulties. Those, while technically they are homeless, they need very little help to be lifted out. And I'm not sure why we continue to take a circular bureaucratic point of view.
People that are experiencing homelessness are not in a very good place. I mean, by just circumstance, it's not the idea that if you have wolves, predators, cartels that get to profit on people's misery, To self-medicate in a time where you find yourself with no other option but to go to a resource center, you are highly vulnerable to be to start self-medicating in that moment.
And as Greg said, they're also not a monolith. They're different. So I think, Heidi, you brought up well that this is, I think, a rare agreement spot.
Yeah, we're going to ruin our street cred
about just, I know, because the frustration level, and it shows even in the frustration level of not even understanding what the point and goal of the bill is.
Yeah, but I don't want to endow confused as to what was trying to be decided.
Yeah, and I don't want to indict anyone's intent. Everyone's trying to solve it, right? It's not, I'm not criticizing the people, but I am saying one of the things we have taken an exceptionally bureaucratic kind of whiny point of view about this, and we need some strong, decisive
moves. So you know, I spoke with the bill sponsor about this today.
Is it Ellison?
Yes, Representative Ellison, yeah. Who's a good friend of mine, and I saw him today, and I expressed the concerns I've shared just now on the program. But what he's saying, and it is, they just, what do you do when the weather gets cold and there's nowhere for someone to go? And people cannot walk perpetually. You cannot enforce your... You can't loiter, or you can't
There's
camp
no doubt we need more facilities.
If they have nowhere to go. And so he's not wrong that we have a problem. But what we really have to do is there needs to be an overflow shelter built, and people are afraid because of wherever that overflow shelter would go, the community around that area will lose their minds. Yeah. And nobody wants that political blowback. Well, I got to tell you what. You got to go do that. It's uncomfortable. It's unpopular. But I don't know what you do otherwise. But if you just decide to stack them all deep in these so-called resource centers, they're not resource centers anymore. They're just warehouses.
We have to get back to coupling services.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to talk more about this next week, because I think there's going to be some surprise bills that sneak through that we're going to have to talk about, and some bills that might need some fixing after they've been passed. Thanks so much for joining us. Greg, take pictures of your fun party tonight.
Okay, I'll do that.
Mara, if you sneak in too, get a picture of that.
All right.
I'll put your name at the door.
Thank you.
Okay.